Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Good Morning Football!
Divisional round is here. Welcome to Good Morning Football. We are live in New York City. Happy Thursday, January 20th. My name's Kay Adams, Peter Schrager. Kyle Brandt is here, and Super Bowl champion Michael Robinson hanging out with us today and tomorrow. Yes. Okay, good. Yes. We got to make picks.
I know. That's going to be tough.
You ready?
I'm ready to do it.
You're ready already?
I'm always ready.
Three of those are going to be really tough for M-Rob. Yeah. One of them, not so much.
Yeah. These are tough ones. There's some sneaky ones.
Not the Buffalo Bills one.
Really? They're playing at Kansas City.
On the road. You know, they're in Arrowhead.
They have Josh Allen. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Good job.
We had a big show. Ryan Leaf on the program. CJ Uzama is stopping by. Michael Buffer, a friend of the show, joining us as well. Yeah. Lots to get to. AJ Hawk. Will be part of our program. You guys can tweet the show, yes, at GMFB. We have some fun things you might not have seen that we're going to show you throughout the show today. So keep it right here as we get set for the throwdown round. It's time for Lee Block.
Lee Block.
Let's get ready to talk football.
The Rams have a tough task on Sunday facing this guy, Tom Brady, and the Buccaneers. This one in Tampa. Here is what Coach Sean McVay had to say to his to the press, I guess, about his team's mindset days before squaring off against the GOAT.
I think it's tremendous respect, but not fear. As a competitor, you know, he is a great, phenomenal player. We have tremendous respect for him, but we're going to have the expectation and anticipation that we're preparing to try to go win this game. And so we know what a great challenge it's going to be. We've got to have a great week of work and then go play to the best of our ability and let the chips fall where they may.
Respect, love, reverence, of course those things exist. But the last time Sean McVay and the Rams went up against Brady, the last two times they came away with a win, week 3 of the season back, week 11 of last season as well. So what do these Rams need to do to defeat Tom Brady 3 times in a row, which seems like a tough task?
Hat trick, yeah, that's amazing. See this is a Microsoft Surface. You got to get Tom Brady throwing this. Just see this right here? Just chucking it on the sideline like he did against the Saints. That's the secret. And I think there's 4 guys who do it. It's very simple. The Rams are made up of all these superstars, and Odell and Jalen and Stafford and great. But it's these 4 guys. This is very, very simple. The 4 sack leaders for the Los Angeles Rams. Aaron Donald, you know him, folk hero. Leonard Floyd, one of his problems in Chicago was he couldn't put on weight because he was too ripped. That was an actual thing. Von Miller, chicken enthusiast. Legend, we'll get to him in a second. And Big Greg Gaines, that's a 300-pounder, third-year guy. He's the other guy next to Donald. They have to get after Brady. I'm trying to think, guys, especially in the Von Miller example. I can't think of a lot of times in Brady's career that he's lost shootouts. It doesn't happen a ton. You know, normally it's the defensive line. It's these guys. It's Von. It's doing this. You think he lost the shootout against Nick Foles in Philadelphia. And I don't want that happening today in Los Angeles because I think typically these shootouts are lost when someone makes a big mistake. Like in that Eagles game, Brady finally fumbled and they lost. I don't think if you're a Matt Stafford guy, as much as we celebrate his win last week, I don't think you want him going toe-to-toe against Brady waiting for someone to make a mistake. Nope. I think you want Von and you want Donald and you want hitting him and hitting him and hitting him. This game, you remember, is almost an iconic game in the Brady lore. Von had an interception in this game. He basically took it over. I think that you didn't bring in Von Miller so you could win in the wild card round. I think you brought him in so you could win games like this. As much as I love Stafford and the offensive guys, it's plays like that and winning a game 17-14 to beat Tom Brady, not 38-35. I think the front 4 has to dominate or I don't have a chance.
Yeah, there's no mystery about how you defend Tom Brady. How do you get after him? You got to drop as many guys in the coverage as you can, and your front 4, your 3, if you're only rushing 3, they have to get to Tom Brady and they have to hit home. In the first matchup, what was it, week 3 of this season, what they did was Raheem Morris had a great plan. He just basically sat at a certain amount of yards and let the front 4 just go eat. And Tom Brady had to throw the ball, 55 times or something like that. That's a lot of times to be throwing the football. But a way that the Rams can just establish themselves and win this game flat out, establish the run game, establish the line of scrimmage. And I've been seeing that from this Rams offense over the last, 5 or 6 weeks of the regular season. Sony Michel's touches have went up. You saw Cam Akers in a great return last week, actually returned week 18, but he got more carries last week and he had fresh legs, all of those things. See, in that week 3 matchup, Matthew Stafford went empty. They didn't run the football as much. They only had 76 rushing yards. And you got to understand the nature and the style of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense. Mm-hmm. They don't want to give up a blade of grass. They pride themselves in stopping the run. So what you do, you show them the run a few times, right? You get 4 and 5 yards when you run the football, so you can force those safeties to come to the line of scrimmage. Mm-hmm. And then totally change up the game plan and go play action and be explosive, because I think this Rams offense is more explosive now than when they beat them in week. Mm-hmm.
Really?
With Deshaun Jackson and mm-hmm. Woods out
well,
there.
Well, because I just think Odell is a better receiver. Yeah. He's not a one-trick pony. Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? Deshaun yep. Jackson could only go deep, and mm-hmm. still Stafford missed them 2 times. I mean, he could have had 2 or 3 mm-hmm. touchdowns.
Yeah. So Raheem Morris is the defensive coordinator of the Rams, and he's got this great responsibility. How do you stop Gronk? How do you stop Mike Evans? I find it fascinating, the storylines here, that 11 years ago, Raheem Morris was the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers as the head coach of the team at 32 years old and was given that opportunity and now has to construct a game plan and is now interviewing for a head coaching job and has to go and beat his former team now as a defensive coordinator as another team. And I think they have the ingredients. I think they have the ingredients. Kyle, you nailed it. There is a plan on how you beat Tom Brady defensively. You send the dogs. But also, you got to stop the run. And that is what they did last time. Take a look at the rushing leaders the last time Brady. These two teams played.
Tom Brady.
Brady, wow. 14 yards on the ground. And hey, Ronald Jones, we don't know if he's going. Fournette, we hope he's going. We don't know. This might be Le'Veon Bell and Keyshawn Vaughn and Gio Bernard. And if it gets to be that, you're going to let Brady have to throw all over. I don't see Brady winning this game if he has to throw all over you. I'll add in 2 more points that I think are huge. Tristan Wirfs and Ryan Jensen. Mm-hmm. Yep. We don't know if
banged
they're
up,
playing.
Right?
Today's practice for the Buccaneers is going to be so important. If they're not out there for the Thursday practice, yeah. I have great concerns about, hey, Friday practice and then get ready Saturday with a walkthrough and then mm-hmm. Sunday game mm-hmm. against Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Leonard mm-hmm. Floyd, Greg Gaines, the guy you mentioned. I honestly think that those two players, not Gronk, not Evans, yeah. not Fournette, are the most valuable players to Brady this week. Mm. If they have them, mm-hmm. Wirfs and Jensen, mm-hmm. let's go. If they don't, this could be a long day for Brady.
He's concerned about Wirfs. You said it. He was pretty transparent about it too. I mean, those running numbers are crazy. Yesterday, you're
they
like,
had 9 rushing attempts.
You go, Leonard Fournette got hurt in that game. I go, no, he didn't. We talked about it. We're like, what happened in this game? And they just abandoned it, and it obviously didn't work out for them. To go back to your Odell thing, I agree with you. I think he's going to have a huge game. Cooper Kupp will do his thing, but he's not their shot guy. We saw it brilliantly in week 18. Odell, a more well-rounded wide receiver. I don't know if they win that first matchup if, you know, they don't have Deshaun Jackson out there. I think I feel good in saying that. They need someone they can go too deep. Now, this is also where Matthew Stafford makes mistakes. So you can say you don't want Brady to throw strikes. I think he's going to throw. I think it is going to be lots to Mike Evans, lots to Gronk, like we saw even just last week. He is a big play waiting to happen. Can he make that big play, and can Stafford get him the ball? Because I think it's going to come down to an Odell Beckham, brilliant addition to the team. It's all worked, but I think it's on Odell to be that guy and give that team that option.
And I think Odell will be able to do it. I mean,
yeah?
You just look at the way Sean McVay uses and deploys Odell Beckham. He puts him on one side, the backside of a 3-by-1, puts Cooper Kupp on the inside on the other side. Mm-hmm. And you can see it on tape, you split the defense in half. Mm-hmm. Both of those guys require 2 sets of eyes on them. So you literally split the defense in half, and then you can game plan to get other guys open. I think it's going to be a great chess match.
I just, last week, the Eagles come into Philly and mm-hmm. into Tampa, and we made this whole thing about the Eagles can run. They looked like they were a little bit, it was too big for the moment, right? Mm-hmm. Like that one was just, Jalen. I don't think the Rams are scared mm-hmm. of Brady, which I think is a huge place to be mentally going into that. And from there, they'll play football. But there's not going to be this 10-point, hey, we'll spot you 10 because you're just scared of Brady, mm-hmm. the big bad wolf. Like, that doesn't exist with this.
They're not afraid of Brady.
No.
At GMFB with your thoughts. Great. Mike Garofalo joining us right now.
Jeezy.
Mike, right here in New York, the Giants, they are looking to fill that general manager vacancy. Dave Gettleman retiring and walking away. Also, their head coach spot open. Where are they in that search?
Well, they've begun the head coaching search, Kay Adams, by requesting Dan Quinn, the former Falcons head coach, now the Cowboys defensive coordinator. So what does that tell you? Well, go back to what John Mara and ownership have said over the last week plus, and that is that the new general manager will oversee coaching. Well, they don't have a new general manager yet. They are in the process of conducting their second round of interviews. Ryan Poles from the Chiefs went yesterday, Joe Shane from the Bills the day before, and today it will be Adam Peters from the 49ers. Now, I was told there's a possibility there could be a fourth general manager interview, but we don't know of that officially just yet. So the Giants are winding down the GM interview. So the fact that they are already lining up Dan Quinn tells you that that is a common candidate amongst the general managers that they have spoken to already. So they're going to move on Quinn, who's got other options and can take a job now because his team is out of the postseason. The Giants want to get their card in and say, hey, we would like a dance as well. So that's what's happening with the Giants right now. There will be more head coaching candidates to come, but they want to make sure that they get in with Quinn, who is, again, a guy that all their candidates seem to agree on is a candidate for their head coaching job.
He is one of the most recognizable voices in all of entertainment, in all of the world. He's a living, I can't do it. He's a living legend. He's a man who gets us all ready to rumble. How excited are we for this one? Ladies and gentlemen, a big Good Morning Football welcome to Mr. Michael Buffer. What's up, Michael?
Whoa. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Kyle. Appreciate that.
Thank you. We are so excited to have you. And thank you on behalf of all of us for that unbelievable Angry Runs introduction you did this week. It had a shot out of a cannon. We know you're a big fan of Angry Runs, which is amazing. Michael, thank you. And let's put you on the spot. Do you have a favorite Angry Runner in this NFL season? Who you got?
Yeah, you know, I probably would say because he's won two scepters that Najee Harris would be my man.
Yeah,
you know, for the year, for 2021. I mean, he's the two-time winner, right? But this week, instead of Angry Runs, you had Angry Round, and the guy that just blew me away because he threw T.J. Watt down like Raggedy Andy, turned around, caught a touchdown, Nick Allegretti from the Kansas City Chiefs. And what really captured my heart, there was this moment where he turned and did a victory run, and it only lasted 1 second because his teammates all ran in and grabbed him. And it reminded me of when Rudy ran onto the field to get into the kickoff lineup. And he's pumping his fist as he runs into the field. And Allegretti had that same move and that same look just for 1 second. I thought, oh, my God, I could hear the music playing, you know. It was a great moment, but Najee probably gets it for the year, but my heart goes out to Nick Allegretti for, you know, scoring a touchdown and having that great moment.
Allegretti. Yeah. Oh, that's great.
We have 2 hours left of the show, but we can hang it up. That was the best answer we've ever had to a question. You even saying Nick Allegretti's name with the way you say it is so beautiful.
Allegretti.
You've done a lot of announcing for football games over the years as well. And here I am, Monday Night Football. We're all sitting on our couches. And there's the man with the voice, Michael Buffer, doing the Rams pregame for the team's first home playoff game at SoFi Stadium. What was that like for you, and what was the atmosphere in the building?
That was the third time I did it for the Rams this year. And I've got to tell you, Peter, that was what was really nice about it was they were red hot. The Rams fans packed that stadium. Now, a lot of times, you know, we've all seen this through the years with the Rams. They were in the Coliseum. They went to Anaheim. They went to St. Louis. They had big crowds in St. Louis. But here in L.A., when the visitors get all these cheers and they score a touchdown, it's like, where is this really L.A.? But they turned out red hot. They were loud. They were vocal. I could hear it when I did my thing in the beginning of the game before the kickoff. And it was really exciting. And that stadium, wow. I don't know if you've been there yet, but, man, that is one fantastic place to watch a game. You know, I love AT&T Stadium where the Cowboys play. I've worked there many times. Great stadium, the big board in the middle with the TV screen. But SoFi and the Super Bowl is going to be there. So it's a great place to go to. And it's great to see the Rams fans turn out.
Mm-hmm. I went once. It's so much stimulation. It's amazing. Michael, good morning. Thank you for being here. You are an absolute legend, and I'd be remiss to say good morning. You and I worked together. It was incredible to watch you in the ring, and you were always so supportive of me. I moonlighted covering boxing, didn't know what I was doing. Michael had no reason to be nice to me. I was avoiding calls of blood and spit in the ring with you, and you were so incredible to me, so I will forever be indebted to you.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate
You're
that.
Welcome. Let's talk about your Twitter. We were scouring it, and I saw an interesting take that you had earlier this season that caught my eye. You suggested the Eagles use offensive tackle Jordan Mailata, who we love on the show, as a fridge-style running back. I'm all for this. I follow your Twitter, but tell me why you think this would work out well for the Eagles.
You know, here's the thing. There's a an Eagle, I'm an Eagles fan, born and raised in Philly and everything. Mm-hmm. So I always follow Bleeding Green Nation. It's a fan website. And they posted a clip of 19-year-old Jordan Mailata running through in rugby, playing rugby, never played football, running through the entire field like a Ford F-150 in a grammar school yard. I mean, it was unbelievable. Oh, you got it there. Yeah. I mean, the guy, he's a stud. He's fast. He probably weighs 30, 40 pounds less there. But look at him, 19 years old. Oh, my God. It just was unbelievable. So it made me think, why don't, you know, it just seems like the coaches are married to these certain plays, the quarterback sneak, whatever. Yeah. If you put a lineman back there or a tight end, a running back in the same set, maybe a weird eye formation or whatever, especially with the Eagles. Is Jordan going to get the ball? Is Hurts going to keep it and go behind Jordan? Is the running back going to go behind Jordan? I mean, that guy's going to make a hole and you're going to score a touchdown. That my thoughts only, but it's just, I don't know why more teams don't do it. The fridge did it and he became a big superstar. Yeah,
there we go.
Mr. Buffer, first of all, great name, Michael Buffer. Michael is an awesome name, and you should probably throw your name in the hat for head coach and offensive coordinator opportunities, man. I mean, that offense you're describing, I lost state championships to it. It's called the Whirly Bird. It's a real offense, so you need to think about coaching one day. But let's get real. Like your trademark phrase, let's get ready to rumble. It's iconic. What are the origins behind the phrase?
You know, Michael, great name, by the way, Michael. The thing is, when I first started 40 years ago in my middle to late 30s, it was the electronic age, and fighters were coming to the ring with the music and a DJ in the house sometimes, and just the crowd gets excited. They anticipate things. They have TV screens. They're seeing everything. The lights dim. The lights come up. And the ring announcers, somewhere along the line, it started in the TV era, where the ring announcers had to introduce the entire commission. Then if it was one of these mega fights with the WBC and the WBA and the IBA, we had to introduce their president and their supervisor and four doctors and three judges. And it killed the crowd. I mean, it just like took all the air out of the room after all that energy and excitement. So I wanted something that would be a hook, like the famous gentlemen start your engines at the Indy 500. Well, 450,000 people go crazy. And I was blessed to actually do that one time, too. And it, you know, I tried, ladies and gentlemen, fasten your seatbelts. And it was like, you know, nothing was happening. Or, I tried to man your battle stations, and, you know, that just wasn't happening.
I like that one.
And, you know, thanks. And the greatest of all times, Muhammad Ali, used to be at the weigh-in and in any press conference. I'm so pretty. I'm ready to rumble. Rumble, young man, rumble. So that word was out there. Mm. And I don't even know. It just started to say, let's get ready to rumble. But I used to say, let's get ready to rumble. 12 rounds of boxing in the heavyweight. I didn't.
Yeah.
And this really good friend of mine, the late Jody Berry, used to open for Ella Fitzgerald in supper clubs, which were really popular in the 50s and early 60s. Wow. And one night we're having a couple of drinks, and he's like, and this guy, he was great. He was old time Hollywood with the Clark Gable mustache. And he told me, he said, Michael, when you say, let's get ready to rumble, shut the up. And I'm like, wow. He said, because people want to react to it. I mean, he knew about stage presence and show business and timing. And I tried it. I took a few seconds off after saying, let's get ready to rumble. And the crowd reacted. And that way I knew I could pass that on to the stars of the show, the fighters. That's what I wanted, was to bring that energy back to the crowd. And, you know, I've been blessed with being able to do it for the World Series and Stanley Cup Finals and NBA Finals and maybe someday a Super Bowl. A lot of playoff games, but not a Super Bowl yet. So
throw it out there.
We'll see. There is one in SoFi this year. Michael, we've got only less than a minute left. We've got two very physically fit, strong, proud men here at the table. Not me. Kyle Brandt and Michael Robinson. And we would like a favor.
Would you introduce
maybe a fake fight between Kyle and Michael Robinson in 30 seconds with the Michael Buffer treatment. Can you please give us one for Good Morning Football?
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event sanctioned by the NFL Network. It's the Tiger versus the Lion. Introducing first, fighting out of the blue and white corner, wearing Niners gold and red, official weight, 241 pounds. His history. He was a tailback, a quarterback, a running back, a receiver, even a fullback from Richmond, Virginia, Penn State, the Niners, and the Super Bowls, Seahawks. He is Burton Michael, the Nittany Lion Robinson. And his opponent fighting out of the orange and black corner, wearing the Stevenson High School t-shirt to show off his guns, weighing in. At 201 and one quarter pounds, his history, the all-time rusher at Stevenson High School. He was the starting running back for the Princeton Tigers for 3 years, and their kick returner found out he was too pretty to stay in pro football, so he became an MTV star on the real world. Then, on the days of our lives, like the sands of the... Oh, forget about that. Anyway, on to the Jim Rome Show, the CBS Network, and then, and now... The NFL Network. Good morning,
this
America.
This is the whole wiki.
He is Kyle the Tiger Brown. Let's get ready.
Let's go.
Woo.
Boom. Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. We got the buffs. Nobody does it better than that. Let's go, buffs. Yeah. Woo.
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have to really fight.
Yeah. I was a little worried you guys were going to want to.
Thanks, Michael. You're the best. Amazing. You're an icon.
Thanks,
we love
guys.
You.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, my gosh.
Stay safe, stay wealthy.
Good luck to your Eagles.
Burrow catches a shotgun snap, drops back, guns it into the end zone,
baby,
into a thicket,
baby, yes.
Where it's caught,
yes.
For the touchdown!
Yes.
Nice. C.J. Uzama in the middle of defenders, hauling in that line drive throw from Joe Burrow.
Let's go, baby! Let's go! Let's go! Let's go!
I could not love our next guest more. He is in his seventh season in Cincinnati, hard to believe, and he was crucial and huge in the Bengals' takedown of the Raiders last weekend during the wild card round. Please say good morning, football, and welcome to Bengals tight end CJ.
What up, CJ? What up, CJ?
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being here. We're always so excited to see you. I wish I could be in Nashville to watch this game, but we got to start with the scene in Cincinnati. Home field, such a great crowd. It was last Saturday. You broke that 31-year drought. What was the mentality heading into that one, and just what did it feel like after?
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing that we focused on all week was the fact that we had kind of been in this situation before. You know, when we were playing the Chiefs, when we were playing kind of some of the later games, we in our mind, thought that these were playoff games and they had playoff implications. And, you know, we got a young team, so they don't really think too much about the moment. They're not thinking the moment's too big or anything like that, which is nice. And we're playing loose. So that was the main point of emphasis. Just play loose, you know, have fun, you know, play within ourselves and go out there and get the dub.
You're always loose, man. That's why we love you. We root for you. You're a great player, and you're such a fun personality, which is why we were thrilled, CJ, when you scored your first career postseason touchdown in that game. And right on cue, you celebrated by hitting the legendary Icky Shuffle. It was beautiful, and so was Icky Woods himself, appearing on this network this week with some things to say about your tribute. Take a listen, CJ.
Oh, man, I loved it, man. I loved it, you know, just to see him get out there and pay homage to me and then throw his little extra little bit in at the end, man. I was in the stands. I was going crazy, man. We had a wonderful time.
What, you call this the Icky Gritty, I guess? Like put them all together?
Yeah, the gritty, gritty, gritty at the end.
He said he had a wonderful time. Two questions. What's it like to hear that from a Bengals legend? And should you get in the end zone this weekend, what do you got planned?
No, that's huge. And that's kind of what I wanted to do. I kind of wanted to pay homage to him. And I knew he was the Roy of the Jungle. And I thought that'd be kind of cool to do and throw your own little spin on it. The execution was so-so, but I thought it was a fun idea. And then this week, I don't know yet. I figure it out, you know, in the hotel bed the night before. I'll just think of something and be like, all right, that sounds good. Let's just pull this out.
There you go, man. I like the footwork, man. The footwork was awesome. I was like, look at CJ doing his thing, man. But look, in all seriousness, let's talk about your leader and quarterback, Joe Burrow. He's been balling all season. When asked about the wild card win yesterday, he said he was trying to downplay it because that's the new normal in Cincy. Now, CJ, what do you think about those words coming from your leader? And is there more work to be done?
You talking about Joe Burr with the glasses on after the postseason?
Oh,
after the
game? Yes.
Come on now.
Yes.
Come on now. Nah. You know, hey, Joe's cool. Joe's a cool customer out there. And he's right. You know, that's the standard right now for us is winning these games and putting ourselves in a position to win the Super Bowl. So he, you know, after the game, we were in the locker room, people were kind of celebrating, and he was just like, he was business as usual. He was taking his pads off, no cigar for him this time, no nothing, just, hey, we're on to the next one. And you love that. You love seeing that out of your quarterback. You know, hey, look, we won a playoff game, that's all fine, but that's not what we signed up for at the beginning of the season. So I love it. I love seeing that out of him.
31 years this fan base has waited, and after the win last weekend, your head coach, Zach Taylor, started a pretty cool tradition. He brought game balls to Bengals fans at local bars, and they were unexpectedly surprised to see their head coach, their punter, Kevin Huber. You then were tasked with delivering a ball yourself to a bar called Walt's Hitching Post in Fort Wright, Kentucky. What was that experience like for you, and what do you think of this new tradition of delivering game balls to the fans after big Bengals wins?
I think it's awesome. Since Coach kind of threw me under the bus last week with the last time I was on with our little Jeopardy, he got ID'd when he went to that bar. By the way, so we got to pick that up.
Awesome.
Seriously,
but it was great. It was great. You know, they teared up a little bit. They ended up sending me flowers yesterday just to say thank you and a nice note, but. I think it's awesome. I think it's awesome to get the city involved. You know, they had our back. We had 66 plus thousand strong in the stadium, in the jungle. So I think it's awesome. A nice little tradition. There's going to be a lot of game balls passed around the city for years to come. Continuing right now this week, hopefully. So, I'm hyped. I think that's a cool thing you started.
It was a huge advantage. Of course, Walt's, I hear, a great place. It's on my list of places to go to when I'm in Cincinnati next. Now, Saturday is a big game and you won't have a ruler of the jungle and you won't have a home crowd and it's the one seed that's rested. What are you focused on the most heading into this game? Because you seem, I like the vibe you're giving off. I like where your head's at.
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing in these playoff games, especially if you're on the road, is no penalties, no costly penalties, and no turnovers. I think if we start that way and kind of establish ourselves physically, you know, this to me and to us as a team, this is going to be a division game, essentially, right? You know, they're a big, tough team. They pride themselves on being physical, and that's us to a T, right? You know, this is postseason football to a T, and this is kind of what we want to go against. So, yeah, I think we start fast, we don't have any penalties, and we win the turnover battle. I think, you know, we should be in a great position to win the game and kind of establish ourselves early and try to get the crowd out of it.
CJ, so let's get this straight. There's some bouncer who says, all right, so you just won a playoff game, first time since the 90s, you're head coach of the Bengals, but what street do you live on and what was your date of birth? Recite that for me. That's how that went down? They carded this guy?
Look, I'm at Walt's and Kevin sends me a text and says, you won't believe that coach just got ID'd at MLT's. And I'm sitting here like, there's no way. There's no way that just happened. I mean, after this game, are you serious? The moment was too big for that bouncer. He wasn't paying attention, clearly.
CJ, we love you here at the table, wishing you all the best on the road in Nashville to get past that one seed. And you just said Super Bowl. I'm so excited. And for everything with the future of this team and Joe Burrow. So go crush it.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you guys having me on.
It is our guy, AJ Hawk. What's up, AJ? Welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. A big fan of the show. So you guys do great work.
Big fan of you. You do great work. Let's jump right into it. AJ, incredible round of playoff games coming up. We got Bengals, Titans, Niners, Packers, Rams, Bucks, Bills, Chiefs. When you look at the slate of games, AJ, where's your mind go? What has you excited this weekend?
Well, I spent 9 years in Green Bay playing for the Packers with that quarterback over there that's pretty good, Aaron Rodgers. So I'd say the Packers game is the first one I think of that I go to Saturday night. I think it's going to be amazing. Hopefully it's below zero, maybe some snow flurries. That would be awesome to see. But I'm really, really excited to see how the Packers look coming off that bye week, see how Aaron's toe is going, and also how some of these guys that are finally getting healthy, what they look like when they get in there and they get some reps here in the playoffs.
Yep. AJ, you were on a show with Pat McAfee, the show of note for ruining interviews of Aaron Rodgers. And you, of course, have him on Tuesdays, and you did. I want to talk to you about the MVP conversation. He obviously deserves it, and he's in the race. Do you think he'll get it without a doubt this year?
I don't know without a doubt if he's going to run away with it, but I absolutely believe that he deserves it. And I know I've seen Tom's numbers and what Tom has been able to do in Tampa. It's absolutely remarkable. But man, with ever since that first game against the Saints, when the Packers obviously weren't really themselves, I feel like Aaron has just been on a tear, and he just is so efficient. He doesn't turn the ball over. And you always, I mean, I don't know if I'm biased or what, but whenever, if Aaron's in the lineup, I feel like the Packers are always in the game. No matter what the score is, no matter what's going on, you feel like, okay, they're going to turn it on. He's going to find a way to get a victory. And I just, every time I see him, I feel that way. So I absolutely believe that he should be the MVP this year.
AJ, let's go to your side of the ball. For years, you were the leader of that linebacker's room, and the defense is going to have to come up big here. We've seen this 49ers attack week after week after week. You know exactly what's coming. It's Kittle, it's Juszczyk, it's Debo, it's Trent Williams, and it's the big boys pushing those linebackers around. Is this Packers team physical enough to keep that San Francisco offense off the field?
They better be. I mean, they've seen it firsthand, I feel like. Obviously, here from the last time they played the Niners in the NFC Championship game out in San Francisco. But that's why I think Shanahan does such a good job of, yeah, of course they're going to try to pound the ball, they're going to try to be physical and win the line of scrimmage, but he's very creative how he gets to it with different personnel groupings, different backs. I mean, Debo Samuel, obviously, you never know, like, what do you consider him when you're trying to identify the offense? Like, receiver, running back, slot receiver, X, Z, like, you never really know. This guy can do everything. So I think Shanahan does a good job of keeping you on your toes and kind of thinking pre-snap if you're a defensive player, but then also that once that ball is snapped, those dudes are coming downhill and they're trying to run you over.
Yeah, AJ, now you've been a part of a Super Bowl winning team before. You were a part of the Packers team back when they beat the Steelers back in Super Bowl 45. Since then, the Packers have not been back. From a player standpoint, how much do you crave another Super Bowl game after you got to that, after you got that first one under your belt?
It's a good question, Mike. First off, I got to let you know, man, the closest I have ever come to being concussed was trying to hit you on the sidelines at Ohio Stadium when we were in college. So, Mike, credit to you, man. You have a rock-hard skull, and you know how to use it. So I appreciate you and what you do. I had to run into you. Had to run into you a few times in the NFL as well, but I still remember that shot. It was just a throwaway. I'm sure you don't even remember. I'm trying to knock you out of bounds, and I hit you. I was like, geez, did I just get hit with 10 baseball bats right in the head? So I respect that, Mike. I think it's awesome. But going back to your original thing, I think at least for myself, when we won the Super Bowl, it made me much more hungry to try to get more. I definitely regret the fact that we didn't get any more during my time there with Aaron Rodgers at the helm. So I think it makes you more hungry because whatever happens, once you win the Super Bowl, it's like, all right, that's the standard. That's the goal every single year. Anything less than that is just a waste of a season almost. So I think it gives you more motivation to try to get more.
Absolutely.
Prolific cranium on Mike Robinson. Yeah. He's the first person to tell you. I mean, it is a massive Costco-sized skull, and he knows how to use it, AJ. But let's do this thing before you go or before traffic picks up. Let's go back to week three. Let's do the thing that you do. Packers went into Levi Stadium, take on the Niners. So San Fran takes a one-point lead under 40 seconds left in the game. Rodgers, right down the field, no timeouts, gets him to field goal range for the win. AJ, what's your gut? Do you think this game is going to be that close, come down to the last minute, or is it going to be maybe one-sided and just whoosh, the Packers go through them?
I don't see it being one-sided, really. I think it definitely could be one of those close games, especially with the weather and what's going on. Let's see how much wind and what it picks up. Also, like, what is the health of Jimmy G? We obviously know that they say he's not going to be 100%. Yeah, of course, but is he going to be able to grip the ball and consistently be an accurate passer? So I think that's a huge part of it. But yeah, I look forward to be somewhat of a close game. But I also look for Green Bay to find a way to win.
AJ, I watch all these interviews with Rodgers and Pat and you, and everyone gives Pat and Rodgers. You've got the one-liners. You just drop little things. You instigate. You stir the pot. You're the Ed McMahon. You're the Andy Richter. What's it been like in these interviews the past 2 years, getting Rodgers on every Tuesday with that three-box screen of Pat, Aaron, and AJ?
Oh, man, it's been awesome. I mean, ever since I started doing the show with Pat, it's just my by far the favorite thing that I've done and that I get to do when it comes to like the media world and broadcasting, just get to be authentic and honestly just have a ton of fun. So it's awesome. Just, yeah, I think that's how we vibe. You know, Pat, obviously he is in a perfect position, like what he does, running the show, driving the show. Like, he's such a high energy, awesome dude. And he's so talented. I get to kind of sit back and just play into what I think is funny. And I'm basically just trying to make myself laugh when I'm on the show and trying to get under Aaron's skin. Whenever Aaron's on, I just want to say something to where he'll send me a text 10 minutes after the show and say that I'm out of control or that I got issues or that I need to cool off or something and stop asking these questions. That's my whole goal. That's my whole goal, really, just to get that text from Aaron where he says, "You got problems, man. You need to watch out." And then he talks to my wife a couple of days later and tells my wife to calm me down. So that's really my whole goal.
The goal is getting the "you have issues" post-text, which is unbelievably cool. We want to send you one 10 minutes from now. AJ, so happy for all the success you're having. Loved you as a player. Love what you're doing now. The true family man meets the linebacker, meets the media god. We love you, AJ. Talk to you soon.
Joining us now is the former number 2 overall pick of the 1998 NFL Draft. He has an amazing story of redemption. He's become a motivational speaker, and he has helped so many along the way. He has also been calling games over in London, being our ambassador for football over there overseas the last couple weeks. Let's welcome to the breakfast table friend of the show, Ryan Leaf.
What's up, Ryan? Ryan,
what's up?
What's up, everybody? Thanks for having me. Early morning here. The 4-year-old is sleeping, yet I am awake. It's not usually the route we go, but I'm happy to be here.
Well, rise and shine. We love having you. And let's start off with your most recent project. It's called Bust, the Ryan Leaf Story, and it's a 10-episode podcast that is about you and your rise to stardom at Washington State University and then the challenges you faced once you entered the NFL. I think this has to be a very... very tough topic for anyone to talk about, and yet you're there. It's the podcast. Tell us why it's so important for you to share your story and for listeners to understand what you went through.
Well, it's different than any podcast you'll listen to, because there's no guests. There's no, you know, it's a produced piece. Kevin Connolly from Entourage fame, as any of you guys are fans of that, Him and I became close friends, and he helped me produce it along with my partner, Anna. And it's just been a passion project, right? It's seemingly what I do when I go speak to communities or when I go help former players or interact with that. It's sharing my story, because you can't keep this peaceful, unchaotic life unless you give it away. I didn't understand what that meant when I first initially started it, but that's exactly the truth. I give it away in the hopes that somebody who might be struggling like I was doesn't end up in the same place that I was. That's the most important part. This podcast has really nothing to do with me. It has everything to do with another, you know, flawed human being who's struggling and who just wants to be better.
It's so well said, and I thank you. I really respect how transparent you are about your struggles and your adversity. And a lot of people are susceptible to this, but you had extraordinary pressure on you when you got back into the league in 1998. Now, times are different. There's different pressures, maybe more pressure in some different ways. How would you give advice, or what would you say to young NFL players who might be dealing with some of those same challenges?
Well, I get a chance, you know, usually every year at the combine, or Jordan Palmer has me come down and speak to his quarterbacks. You know, a couple of years ago was with Joe Burrow, last year Trevor Lawrence. And so what I tell them is simply tell my story, because there's something to be said about getting to where I got to. I was the second overall pick. I was expected to, you know, play well. Expectations were really high. So there's some truth into how to get there and do it the right way. It's what you do when you hit a wall or when failure happens. I think if you witness what Trevor Lawrence did this year, I don't know if there was a more mature individual to have gone through what he went through. Like, that adversity in my first year, pretty much the same, summed it all up, right? Kevin Gilbride was fired in about week five. We saw Urban Meyer go that way, struggled the rest of the season. So did Trevor. And then that final game, right, against the Colts, he looked as advertised. He put in that work all year long. And I thought it was a great reward for him and his diligence to get to where he was at. And I expect a lot of big things from him. Unfortunately, you know, for those out there that are Jags fans, it may be a systemic problem in Jacksonville, and you better get it right when you hire this new head coach. As for other quarterbacks, I simply tell them to be themselves, to understand that they're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and invest in yourself, everything you do to make you a better football player. And I think these young men that come into the league are so much more well-prepared than I was in 1998, right? It took a special individual to be a successful quarterback. Just look at the guy who was drafted ahead of me in Peyton Manning. So those are the types of individuals you want in your locker room, guys that can change the environment where, even if a systemic problem exists, you make a difference.
Absolutely, Ryan. The greatest marker of success is not, you know, how you deal with people and issues in times of success, but it's when times of adversity and how you handle that is the greatest marker of success. So you're absolutely right. Now, we're just days away from the divisional round with some of the league's best quarterbacks set to face off. Two questions for you. Which quarterback do you have your eyes on, and who do you think will be under the most pressure to take their team to the championship round?
Well, my eyes have been on Joe Burrow ever since that Chiefs game. I just didn't think this team was, you know, primetime ready for the big lights. And what they did and how they came back in that football game and how they made adjustments at halftime defensively. This team is ripe to do something special. Now, does he need more seasoning? Does he need another year? Or can he debunk that idea that a quarterback in his first opportunity in the playoffs can make a run towards the Super Bowl? I think he can. So my eyes are directly on him. He's one of the most accurate, poised, character-driven and leader that you can imagine. So the pressure side of this, it's a lot different. It's on Matthew Stafford. I'm here in Los Angeles. I watched the Jared Goff era, and I watched them mortgage their whole team in draft capital over the next few years to get this quarterback. Stats eerily similar to what Jared Goff produced in 2018. Todd Gurley was a big part of that. What is this team if they go into Tampa and lose? It'd be the same kind of team they were a year ago, right? A divisional round loss, and you wonder what's going on. The addition of Von Miller and Odell Beckham Jr. have raised the stakes for Matthew Stafford. If they can run the football, Allow him to do play action. He is one of the best in the business. So it will be excited to see. I'll be excited to see how he performs this weekend against Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I think he has the most pressure on him of any quarterback out there.
Brian, you're great at this. You're one of the best in the business. I mean it. You're so good at this. We could talk football all day, but somehow we have to stop and marvel that it's been 24 years since the whole world was asking Manning or Leaf, Manning or Leaf. I don't know how the time went away that quickly, but as we know, the Colts take Manning, the Chargers take you. And I think it's really cool. I don't know if everybody knows this. When Peyton was inducted into the Hall of Fame back in August, you were there. You joined him. Can you tell us about your friendship with Peyton Manning and what it means to you?
Well, it's incredibly meaningful to me, right? People don't understand the relationships that are built inside a locker room or around football and the peer aspect of things. On the outside looking in, it's always fanatics and hoopla and stuff, but there's real personal relationships. Him and I met on a phone call while we were both in college, set up by our SIDs. Simply because we knew we were going to be tied to one another for a long time. And his family's been amazing to me and my family. And, you know, when it's all said and done, we're both retired football players, dads, and broadcasters now. It's funny to see we got that. Yeah, if you look behind me, I got – that was the gift that he gave everybody at his Hall of Fame induction was his bobblehead. So that's on the top of the stand there. I just – flick it when I walk by, when I head out the office. You know, special guy. Always asked him how he did it because I know how hard it was and how I couldn't do it. He just is a good pal. I'm glad we stayed in touch, right? I mean, he kind of kept it going because there's no way I wanted to talk to anybody while I was in prison. You know, every once in a while I'd get a message from him, from his family to my family or something like that. A little bit of keep your head up, you know, it's going to be okay. That's all we need sometimes when you're in the darkest places. And, you know, I applaud him and what he's doing and how he's accomplished everything in his life.
Wow. That's special stuff, Ryan. We really appreciate you. We got to check out the podcast and congratulations on all the great things you're doing right now. And congratulations and thank you for sharing your story. It's incredible work you're doing.
Thanks. You guys going to be out here for Super Bowl?
Yep.
Hope to see you.